Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
All right, family, we are just trying to get a hold of our doctor to take us through our conversation as we speak about OCD. We have Dr. Jerry Bazadenhout from the Vista Clinic, who's been joining us throughout this month, speaking to us about OCD, the different treatment options, therapy options, and what exactly OCD even is. And it's been a very educational series, I must say. I've learned a lot about it, and I trust that you have as well. So we continue the conversation on OCD, and today we're talking about understanding the OCD cycle, right? OCD operates in a repetitive loop that can feel impossible to escape. Understanding the cycle is key to recognizing how the condition develops and persists. The OCD cycle typically includes an intrusive thought, a surge of anxiety, a compulsive behavior, and temporary relief, only for the anxiety to return, as the doctor has shared with us a number of times. So today we're looking into the cycle and how breaking it is a major step toward recovery. Dr. Jerry, good morning and welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, listeners.
Thank you so much for joining us once again. Now, let's speak about these stages of the OCD cycle. You've touched on them a number of times in our conversations. What are those stages?
So we break it down artificially into different steps. So we start with the intrusive thoughts, and then there's a feeling, the anxiety. Then there's a behavior we call the compulsion. And then we get that temporary relief. Mm-hmm. And then the cycle restarts itself again. Well, it actually doesn't restart it. It just continues. We call it restarting. But the actual fact is that cycle doesn't alleviate the problem. It is just, that's the cycle.
Okay. And there's no getting, is there any way to interrupt the cycle anywhere in the middle of it?
Yeah, there is. So part of the OCD problem is that people feel overwhelmed because the problem is in the brain.
Okay.
So we can't see it.
Yeah.
And it feels like, oh, this is me. And one of the definitions is that the thoughts are your own thoughts, but you know, you can't resist them and you can't stop them.
Mm.
So most people believe we are, I believe I'm normal. So if I have an illness and I'm not aware of it, I think these are my normal thoughts,
right,
that just runs around in my head.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. So, continue.
Yeah. No, so that's why the cycle goes, and when I have a thought, I do something, I get a feeling associated with it, I do something and I feel better about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a normal kind of behavior. And the body unconsciously applies a normal cycle to an illness. And therefore, it's not helpful in the long term.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to talk about that in a little while, about why that temporary relief actually can reinforce that pattern. But before we get there, how do obsessions lead to compulsions in the cycle?
So the obsession is often something that's something bad's going to happen.
Yes.
Whether it's, being contaminated, a family member dying, some thoughts or violent thoughts. So there's all these negative thoughts that happen. And then our normal way is just to do something. And it's actually a biological treatment. If I'm physically active,
mm-hmm.
it forces my anxiety network to subside.
Okay.
That's why being busy is good for us. But this doesn't fit into the normal anxiety loop or function.
Mm.
And therefore, by doing something, it doesn't alleviate the problem. It becomes a cycle. It's a non-functional cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got no value, if I can put it like that, in terms of doing life.
Yeah.
So if you want to break it, there's different, by breaking it artificially into different stages,
mm-hmm.
you can learn where can I break the cycle. Is it with looking at understanding the thoughts, what makes the thoughts more frequent, what's the intensity, also checking is the thought a real thought or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of it is linking that thought. Okay, let's say it's a fear of contamination. So is it real to be fearful of being contaminated?
Okay.
Yeah, to be cautious is fine. That's normal.
Uh-huh.
So I can never get away from normality. But being totally fearful that, you know, I'm going to pick up every germ every second, that's unrealistic.
Right.
So by looking at the thought and understanding the thought, I can challenge it. The same with a feeling. If I feel anxious normally, I just want to get away from the feeling. I do something to get away from danger.
Okay.
So if I know that it's just a feeling, then I can learn how to be with the feeling without having to react to it.
Okay.
And the same goes with the compulsion. The brain tells me I'm fixing this abnormal thought by doing something. And then by looking over a longer term, I say, okay, but is it actually helping? Is it beneficial or not?
Right, right.
You know, again, looking at, okay, that's what's happening. So does it actually help? No, it gives a relief. But the relief is just part of the cycle. It's actually not solving anything.
Right, right.
And by identifying the patterns in that cycle, yeah, it gives you access to a different place where you can actually try and break the cycle. And that's the beauty of it, is that you don't have to have a recipe to do, you know, you have to attack the thoughts or you have to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
You can work it from different angles, which makes it very personalizable.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. You're talking about the relief and how it's just a part of the cycle. Let's talk a little bit about that. Why does temporary relief from compulsions reinforce the OCD pattern?
So our normal, you know, if I've got danger in front of me, my system warns me, I climb into the tree and I feel safe. That's the normal kind of cycle if I oversimplify it.
Yeah.
Now my brain registers danger as part of, you know, these kind of intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing something. It registers, okay, I've acted. You know, the body is listening to me. You know, it's keeping itself safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel that moment's relief. But the reality is that the thought is illness-based. So it doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
It'll just come back.
Yes, yes.
And that's why it's temporary. But unfortunately, when anxiety is and other uncomfortable sort of emotions are very prominent, then we tend to use our emotional thinking patterns, not our cognitive pattern.
Okay.
So that system is designed for short term, for quick and easy usage, but it doesn't look at the past, the present, and the future.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't look at the consequences of behavior and the possible, you know, pros of doing something, the possible cons of doing something.
Right.
So when you get stuck in that OCD cycle, we tend to overuse the emotional network. And that's why the therapy is more cognitive, because then we can look at the thoughts, we can analyze, we look at the, you know, the emotions, and then we look at the behavior.
Right.
And understanding those patterns comes from the cognitive side. And then at the same time, we can see, okay, but is this behavior actually helping?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can reason with yourself in a different way. But the interesting thing is, it's not going to take the intrusive thoughts away.
Right.
Because remember, that's part of an illness, so it's not reasonable. It's illness thoughts.
Yeah.
So, and that's why when we break the cycle with our cognitive behavior therapy, we're not trying to get away from these thoughts. We're actually teaching the person to have the thought, to tolerate that emotion, and behave in a way that are constructive for them.
Right. To not necessarily respond to it every single time in this specific way that is not helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's important. We, you know, they're not changing the thoughts because it's illness.
Yeah.
But the person can then decide, how do I want to react to those illness thoughts? rather than making it one with himself and say, these are just my thoughts.
Okay. And then the longer they do that, the longer they practice, you know, just tolerating those thoughts and not responding to them in this unhelpful way, do they eventually go away, the thoughts, or do they just learn how to deal with them?
Most often they don't go away. That's where medication comes in.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so medication can help with that kind of illness thoughts and subside them if it works effectively. And that allows the person then to change habits and manage sort of residual kind of thoughts.
Okay.
What often happens is those thoughts will go to the background when people are using medication.
Okay.
It doesn't always disappear, but it makes it much easier for the person then to engage their cognitive thinking patterns and also, you know, engage their own goals in life, engage their other protective factors in life, like their spiritual life and their friends, friendships and that, and that makes them stronger.
Mm.
And then the illness falls into place a bit more.
Okay.
Now, you know, some people, they lose the thoughts, you know, with medication.
Okay.
Other people suffer, you know, they really have, it's hard work for them to live a functioning life with those intrusive thoughts.
Sure. Even with medication?
Even with medication.
Wow.
It's a daily struggle for them where they have these kind of intrusive thoughts with anxiety associated with that.
Yeah.
And then that constant battle to have goal-directed sort of behaviors and to stick to what they want to achieve in life and how they want to engage with them.
Okay. Now, how can awareness of this cycle help in seeking help or starting treatment?
Well, you know, if you identify illness patterns and, you know, it's not based within your culture and within your belief system and the way it sort of presents itself all the time. Let's say, you know, you get these blasphemous thoughts and you're a devoted Christian.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fit reality. You know, then you really have to think, okay, wow, is this me or is this just an illness?
Right.
And then looking, okay, how do I get help for this illness? And again, family and friends are quite good at highlighting that, well, you know, are you aware that you wash your hands 10 times a day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's, you know, you've made us late every day because you're washing hands. You have to wash it 10 times. Okay, but that's not normal. We all do it once and then we go out. So, you know, have a look at this. Why are you doing this? So understanding it again.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we talk about it, and I think that's something specifically in Africa that we all have to do is in different languages, we need to develop words and descriptions for these kind of brain illnesses, because if we can describe it in our own language, we can understand it better.
Mm.
And stigma is just a feeling. It's a negative feeling that's attributed towards something. So the more we've got words so we can describe it and we can explain to each other what's happening, the less we have that negative impact or the negative feeling, and the more we can see it as what it is, and it's a problem, and then we manage it.
Mm. Interesting. Now, what are some real-life examples of the OCD cycle in action that you can share with us?
I've got a couple of patients. One, she's a healthcare worker, and through COVID, with them, you know, with excessive focus on the risk of contamination, you know, that triggered an OCD with her.
Mm.
So she walks around investigating her body for possible scratches or open places on her skin, you know, and then because of the fear of contamination, she puts plasters on herself. Mm. So she spends an enormous amount of money on plasters, wearing long sleeves to hide the plasters, because there's a side of her that knows it's abnormal.
Right.
Cleaning, hand washing. So she functions, but takes an enormous amount of energy for her to function. And the more she's exposed to people who's got an infection, the worse that kind of fear has become, and the more plasters she puts on her body. It's a funny picture in my mind, you know, seeing someone look like they're full of Mickey Mouse plasters, but
right.
In reality, it's quite disabling.
Mm.
Another patient of mine is a housewife. So she has to do the housework in a very specific order.
Okay.
She's not allowed to change it at all. And she has to iron every piece of clothing 4 times.
Sheesh.
And if she gets interrupted somewhere in the process, she has to start right from the front again.
Yeah.
She has to re-iron everything that's there 4 times again.
Yeah.
And then she has to wash her hands so that she's folded the clothing, and then she washes hands. She puts the one child's clothes in their room. Then she goes back and she washes her hands again, and then she takes the next one to the next room. She washes again. So it's a constant hand washing and that. So it's very disabling in terms of her ability to function.
Mm, mm. So going back to your example of the one with the plasters all over, and you mentioned that this started during the COVID situation?
Yes. Yeah.
So does this mean that it's not something that you're necessarily born with? It can come up because of something, because of some event that happens in your life?
Yes, unfortunately it can sometimes. It's not very often, but it's it can happen like that.
Really?
If the world wars taught us that if you apply the wrong amount of pressure for long enough, anybody will develop some sort of a cognitive or emotional problem,
right,
or an illness. So, with COVID, it was extreme in terms of our fear of contamination. And there was quite a few people that developed either depression with strong, obsessive compulsive symptoms with that,
mm-hmm,
or, they've developed OCD because of all the pressure,
yeah,
that was on. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. You can get people who experience trauma as well.
Uh-huh.
It's extreme trauma that can also trigger it.
Okay.
So there are different things that can bring it back on late in life. It's not common, but it does happen, yeah.
And then when these patterns begin and these cycles begin, initially you're still trying to figure out what will bring the relief and then somehow land on,
yeah,
these mechanisms like the plasters or the ironing 4 times, and you find somehow that this brings you temporary relief.
Yes, yeah. Because remember the brain,
mm-hmm,
the anxiety part of our brain network wants us to do one or two things to alleviate the danger.
Okay.
So the intrusive thoughts are the danger. Or it highlights a possible danger, and then the rest of the normal brain reacts to that.
Right.
And it, now it wants me to do one thing. And because I'm engaging my emotional thinking network on patterns,
mm-hmm,
I can't look back and see that, okay, I've done this 50 times today. It actually hasn't helped at all.
Right.
The brain just remembers, so that temporary relief.
Yes.
Okay, we do that again because I felt better for a moment. Yeah, I just felt better for a moment because that system in the brain is based on the here and the now. It's not based on longer term sort of,
yes,
consequence of behavior and beneficial and non-beneficial kind of behaviors.
Sure. And so that's why, like you said, for many of them, they will know that this is not normal, what I'm doing, but it does provide some relief. So I'm just going to keep doing it. If I have to hide it from other people because I know it's not, they might look at me funny, I'll do that. But it does provide some relief, so I'll keep doing it.
Yes. Remember, we've got an automatic face-saving activity as well.
Yes.
So we always automatically want to save our own dignity.
Yes.
So unconsciously, we will rationalize our behavior and explain it away and hide it. And not because we're naughty or we want to lie.
Mm.
Ourselves and other people. It's just the brain is just trying to save dignity.
Mm. And then,
or preserve the dignity.
Just my final question before we close is, when we come up with these, so when you're talking about, for example, the one who is terrified of contamination, it makes sense to them that they're going to wash their hands 10 times before they do anything.
Yes.
And wash and constantly, sanitizing everything. What about, does that relief measure always is it all in line with the fear? Because I'm trying to figure out, what would you be trying to relieve when you're ironing something four times? Or, you know, are they ever just completely disconnected? The thing that brings me the relief and the intrusive thought?
That one is a difficult one, because I can't really understand what the fear is behind it.
Right.
So she, you know, with hand washing, you've got the generalized contamination fear. Mm-hmm. So with her, my assumption would be that she's ironing it, you know, four times to possibly kill any germs.
Okay.
You know, with the heat. And also, it's that kind of thing, I have to do it right.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of neatness kind of compulsion, where people, you know, I have to put things in a certain order, I have to do certain things.
Yeah.
So that's supposed to be part of that, is where she has to do it the wrong, you know, the right way.
Sure.
And the right way is to do it at least, you only have to do it four times.
Mm. Okay. Wow. Okay. So any final thoughts that you'd like to share as we wrap up this one, the OCD cycle?
Well, the interesting one was when, you know, with that lady, when I discussed about it, mm-hmm. she, you know, she's got no control over it.
Okay.
And when we explored the patterns, she realized, but she irons 4 days a week, but the other 3 days she doesn't iron. So she's actually got control over the cycle, but didn't realize that she's got it.
Interesting.
Yeah, because she believed she can never stop and she can never master not ironing four times. And when she suddenly realized, wow, I'm actually unconsciously breaking this cycle already, and I have a certain amount of control.
Oh, wow.
It suddenly sort of gave her the confidence to look at how can she break that cycle of not ironing four times, but only ironing once.
Interesting. Very interesting. Oh, this is an interesting subject. Mm. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jerry, for coming through once again. It's been eye-opening as always. Out of all the conditions that we've talked about throughout the past few months, this has really been eye-opening. I didn't realize how deep this could actually get. So thank you so much for opening our eyes to this. God bless you, and I look forward to chatting again soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Bongi. Enjoy your weekend.
All right. Thank you so much.
You are tuned in to Mid Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.